Hi, everyone. It's me, Katie Couric. You know, if you've been following me on social media, you know I love to cook, or at least try, especially alongside some of my favorite chefs and foodies, like Benny Blanco, Jake Cohen, Lighty Hoik, Allison Roman, and Ina Garten. So I started a free newsletter called Good Taste to share recipes, tips, and kitchen must-haves. Just sign up at katiecouric.com/goodtaste. That's KATIECOURIC.com/goodtaste. I promise your taste buds will be happy you did.
How do you feel about biscuits? Hi, I'm Akilah Hughes, and I'm so excited about my new podcast, Rebel Spirit, where I head back to my hometown in Kentucky and try to convince my high school to change their racist mascot, the Rebels, into something everyone in the South loves, the biscuits.
I was a lady rebel. Like, what does that even mean?
It's right here in black and white in print, so they lie.
Bigger than a flag or mascot.
Listen to Rebel Spirit on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you ever wonder where your favorite foods come from?
Like, what's the history behind bacon-wrapped hot dogs?
Hi, I'm Eva Longoria.
Hi, I'm Maite Gomez-Rejon.
Our podcast, Hungry for History, is back.
And this season, we're taking an even bigger bite
out of the most delicious food and its history.
Seeing that the most popular cocktail is the margarita, followed by the mojito from Cuba and the piña colada from Puerto Rico.
Listen to Hungry for History on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've spent the last 5 years of my journalism career interviewing people who say they've been wrongfully convicted. And among the women I've spoken to, one of the most common charges against them is shaking their babies to death. I see these cases so often that I can't include them all on this show. The accusation of shaking a baby to death evokes a visceral reaction from many people. You might be feeling it right now. Horror followed by sadness for the defenseless child, and maybe even disgust for the person accused of such a crime. Many jurors at trial certainly feel this way, and the prosecutors count on it. But the thing is, the medical diagnosis used to prosecute this type of crime has been contested time and time again. Last year, the New Jersey Court of Appeals even ruled that in many instances, it was junk science. And let me be clear, people do abuse children. They get jailed for it all the time. But often when an infant ends up in an emergency room with what seems like inexplicable internal injuries and no other obvious signs of abuse, doctors and then prosecutors quickly determine it's what's known as shaken baby syndrome, a scientifically disputed cause of death with often devastating consequences for the people charged. Today, we hear from one of them.
My name is Tanya Miller, and I was incarcerated in Michigan Women's Huron Valley Correctional Facility for 18 years for a crime I didn't commit.
This is Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling. Today, Tanya Miller. Tanya Miller was born May 1983 and grew up in Fulton, Michigan.
Growing up, we lived in the country, and my mother worked at a plastics company at the time, and then later on, she started working for a manufacturing company for car parts. And my father worked at General Motors. But we grew up, you know, not very financially secure. We struggled a lot financially, but we were like a really close family, all of the siblings.
Tanya has a huge family.
My father had been married and divorced a couple of times, and so I have siblings, you know, from him, from prior marriages.
How many of you?
My parents have five together. Wow. And then my mother had a sixth one later, but my father has four prior to.
Wow.
Yeah.
10 siblings.
Okay, and where do you fit in the lineup of everybody?
In the middle
somewhere.
Right in the middle. Yeah.
Wow. So what was that like?
Me and my older brother, my mom's oldest, we're two peas in a pod. So we were always together. So I was a little tomboy running around doing whatever my brother did. I admired him so much. And he would take something apart and I'd put it together. Or he'd want to climb a tree. I want to climb the tree. If he broke a bone that year, I broke a bone that year. It was like we literally followed suit with each other.
What were some of your interests?
I love having my hands in the dirt. I love gardening. I loved anything that had anything to do with nature. So we were always on four-wheelers, on horses. We were doing 4-H, raising chickens and turkeys and Cornish hens and, you know, those kinds of things. So anything that had something to do with nature.
Then when she was 11, Tanya's parents separated.
When Tanya moved in, she was 12, I was 6.
This is Whitney Wessner. She goes by Whit.
Tanya is considered, well, I consider her my best friend and my older sister.
When Tanya's parents split, her mom moved the family to Battle Creek in the house next door to 6-year-old Whit.
We even had a shared driveway. I mean, I literally could jump out my bedroom window and go up their back steps right into their house. And I just automatically took a liking to her as, like, I looked up to her. I actually hung out with her more than I did her siblings.
What was it about Tanya? Because I'm sure some of her siblings were closer in age to you as well.
I was just drawn to her as a person, as like her energy. And I was like, I want to hang out with her. You know, she was the older, cool kid to me.
And she kept Whit around even if it annoyed Tanya's older friends or boyfriends.
Why is this 10, 12-year-old just constantly around you? You know what I mean? Like, tell her to go away. And she's like, no.
Why do you think? Because I think if I was her, when I was her age, I wanted nothing to do with kids. Like, right. I'd be like, why is this 10-year-old around me? Why do you think she let you around?
I don't know. Her and I just, there's just this connection there.
Whit says Tanya and her did everything together, from baseball.
So she's pitching me and she's kind of probably underestimating the little 10-year-old with the bat. And she pitched me one and turned to talk to somebody and I clocked it. And oh, she had the biggest black eye.
Oh my God.
Oh, we had to run to my mom's house and put peas on her face. Like, she's like, your daughter actually hit the ball.
To soccer.
She was a great soccer player. So she would take me rollerblading, roller skating around the neighborhood. She did. She taught me a lot of things. She taught me a lot of things that she doesn't even know that she taught me. And, you know, to this day, she is my best friend. And that has never changed.
Tanya, by all accounts of family and friends, was great with kids.
It was natural. It was natural for her. I never once saw her lose her patience.
As often happens with big families, Tanya stepped up to help her mom with all the kids.
That was really difficult because then I became like the live-in babysitter. I was the one making sure all the kids, you know, had their dinner, had their baths, had their homework done and stuff while mom was working. And she had to work a lot to support all of us. So she was hardly there.
Tanya played mom and then she became one.
At 15, I got into a relationship with somebody that was significantly older. Not significantly. He was 24 and I didn't know it. He said he was 19. But I ended up pregnant. And so I had a daughter at 16.
Wow.
Yes.
Tanya gave birth to a baby girl named Kayla.
But she had, with all her siblings, had already been mothering at that point in her life. So having her own, it wasn't like a typical teenager having a baby. Like, what do I do?
But Tanya was still just 16.
I ended up not completing the high school scene. I went to like a night school. And so I was able to take my daughter with me.
And the relationship with Kayla's dad didn't last.
It was not a very good relationship. And I ended up getting back into a relationship with a boy that I had been with before.
A boy named Alan. And at 18, they had her second daughter, Alicia.
You were going to school. Were you working? How were you guys surviving?
Yeah, we were working. I was a hostess. And I can't remember if he was a cook or if he was doing dishes at the time, but he stepped up and really helped. Like he got jobs here and there when he could. Teenagers, you don't always keep a job for long, but it was a struggle.
But as always, there was Whit. Now in her teens, she was ready to help.
I would sit with the kids, you know, while she'd take a shower or, you know, I was more involved than the child's father.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I was there. And it's not that she needed somebody else to help her, because Tanya was a great mother.
And she still had plans for herself and her future. She earned herself a scholarship to community college.
I wanted to go to be a pediatrician, ironically. But that unfortunately all fell through.
Alicia was a very sick baby from birth.
They, during labor and delivery, they did lose her heartbeat at one point and had to do an internal monitor on her. So then they were very quickly trying to get her born.
Wow.
And so they were kind of worried about her being low birth weight. She was 6 pounds. She, you know, she was small, but she wasn't, you know, preemie or anything like that. Immediately, everything seemed to be okay. But then after a couple of weeks at bringing her home, things just were not the same. You expect it to kind of be like your first one where you don't really have any issues or anything. And so I knew something wasn't right, but I didn't know how to communicate it or what it was exactly.
Well, my first experience with Alicia that scared me was you'd be holding her and she would just like gasp for air out of nowhere. I would get nervous and just hand her back. I had never seen that in a child. She would space off at the bright lights and not even like blink.
She didn't want to eat very much. She would almost chew on the nipple as if she was teething, but she wasn't teething. Her diapers weren't, she wasn't, you know, urinating like she was supposed to. It was just a lot of little things. And then eventually it was, she looked like she was staring right through you. She would just go limp.
Did you take her to the doctor?
Multiple times.
And what did they say?
That I was a paranoid mom. And yeah, so when she had quit breathing, they basically told me that she was angry and learned how to hold her breath.
That's what they said.
Yeah. So they didn't take me serious at all. I don't know if it was because I was a young, unwed mother of two children on Medicaid. And so that was why they didn't take me serious. But they put that in my file. So whenever I would call, I wouldn't even get the appointments.
She says her family and friends also knew something was wrong.
But we couldn't pinpoint anything. We didn't know what to call it, what it was, what to research. So I had no idea.
October 19th, 2001 started off normal for Tanya and her family.
Alan had gone fishing really early in the morning. And so I was up with the baby trying to get her to eat a bottle. She absolutely refused to eat.
So she laid her back down.
Kayla got up a little bit later and had her cereal and was watching her movie. And then eventually Alicia decided to wake up, and she was just as happy as could be.
They played until Alicia got fussy and then called Whit to come and help while she got ready.
Can you head over in about 20 minutes so that you can watch the girls while I jump in the shower? So I said, of course, absolutely.
While she waited for Whit, Tanya tried to feed Alicia again.
So I'm holding her, I'm feeding her, and she coughs and formula is like pouring out of her eyeballs, out of her nose, out of her mouth. And so I hold her upright and her one eye like went to the back and like it just rolled to the back. And then she went limp. Like, and it was so unexpected. I had almost dropped her. And so I laid her on the floor and I called 911.
Tanya also called Whit.
All I hear is frantically is, Alicia's on the way to the hospital. She stopped breathing.
Alicia was raced to the hospital, transferred to a pediatric unit, and put on life support. Then doctors ordered a CT scan that showed mild swelling in Alicia's brain, as well as bleeding. An eye examination also found retinal hemorrhaging. By this time, Alan and the whole family had gathered in the hospital waiting room, anxious for any information about what was going on. Then the doctor came in with news. He said, based on the symptoms Alicia was showing, she had, quote, abusive head trauma or shaken baby syndrome.
When the doctor walked in and said it, Alan kind of went after him, like, the nerve of you, like, this is not, no, this didn't happen. And then they separated us and they started questioning him and started questioning me. But when they asked me to do like I just did with you and go through the entire day and tell them what happened throughout the day, they kept stopping me and leaving the room, talking to whoever and coming back in and saying, well, that couldn't have possibly happened. You must have dropped her or you must have this or, you know, it was just like what I was saying was not what they wanted to hear. And so they kept making it seem like I was changing my story when I'm simply just trying to tell you what happened from the beginning to the end.
It was harrowing and it was about to get worse. Alicia was taken off life support on October 20th and died at 7:27 p.m. She was 11 weeks old. Two days later, Tanya was brought to the station for questioning by Detective Tim Hurt of the Battle Creek Police Department. But they didn't get far. Tanya asked for an attorney and was released the next day.
I guess they didn't have enough to even arraign me at the time, so they just let me go.
But Tanya's life was falling apart. The state eventually took away her 2-year-old and placed her in foster care.
It was very difficult being home and looking over and seeing a toddler bed with no toddler in it, you know, a bassinet with no baby in it, and just to know, like, it's never going to be the same again.
And at 18, she was being investigated in her newborn baby's death.
It was so traumatic and having no help, not getting any kind of help therapy-wise, having no way to really truly grieve and just knowing your every move was being watched, every conversation I was having, you know, anything. I'm just all over the newspapers. I didn't want to have a TV. I didn't want to see the news. I just didn't want the trauma of all of it anymore. I seriously had contemplated suicide. Just life was meaningless at that point.
Were you even able to grieve Alicia?
Not like I should have, no. I would find myself at the cemetery a lot, just, you know, laying there with her, basically. But to actually grieve, looking back, no, I never did have that opportunity.
Even though she wanted out of life, Tanya knew she had to stick around.
I couldn't follow through with that. I had Kayla, and I truly believed that I was going to be found innocent of that.
But she wasn't. Tanya was arrested, charged, and tried for the death of her baby, Alicia, on April 8th, 2003.
Hello, everyone. I am Lacey Lamar.
And I'm Amber Ruffin, a better Lacey Lamar.
Boo.
Okay, everybody, we have exciting news to share. We're back with season 2 of the Amber and Lacey, Lacey and Amber show on Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network. You thought you had fun last season? Well, you were right. And you should tune in today for new fun segments like Sister Court and listening to Lacey's steamy DMs.
We've got new and exciting guests like Michael Beach, that's my husband, Daphne Spring, Daniel Thrasher, Peppermint, Morgan J, and more. You gotta watch us.
No, you mean you have to listen to us. I mean, you can still watch us, but you gotta listen. Like, if you're watching us, you have to tell us. Like, if you're out the window, you have to say, hey, I'm watching you outside of the window. Just, you know what? Listen to the Amber and Lacey, Lacey and Amber show on Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. It's me, Katie Couric. If you follow me on social media, you know I love to cook, or at least try, especially alongside some of my favorite chefs and foodies like Benny Blanco, Jake Cohen, Lydie Hoyt, Allison Roman, and of course, Ina Garten and Martha Stewart. So I started a free newsletter called Good Taste that comes out every Thursday, and it's serving up recipes that will make your mouth water. Think a candied bacon Bloody Mary, tacos with cabbage slaw, curry cauliflower with almonds and mint, and cherry slab pie with vanilla ice cream to top it all off. I mean, yum, I'm getting hungry. But if you're not sold yet, we also have kitchen tips like a foolproof way to grill the perfect burger and must-have products like the best cast iron skillet to feel like a chef in your own kitchen. All you need to do is sign up at katiecouric.com/goodtaste. That's KATIECOURIC.com/goodtaste. I promise your taste buds will be happy you did.
When you think of Mexican culture, you think of avocado, mariachi, delicious cuisine, and of course, lucha libre. It doesn't get more Mexican than this. Lucha Libre is known globally because it is much more than just a sport and much more than just entertainment. Lucha Libre is a type of storytelling. It's a dance. It's tradition. It's culture. This is Lucha Libre Behind the Mask, a 12-episode podcast in both English and Spanish about the history and cultural richness of Lucha Libre. And I'm your host, Santos Escobar, the emperor of Lucha Libre and a WWE superstar. Join me as we learn more about the history behind this spectacular sport from its inception in the United States to how it became a global symbol of Mexican culture. We learn more about some of the most iconic heroes in the ring. This is Lucha Libre Behind the Mask. Listen to Lucha Libre Behind the Mask as part of My Cultura Podcast Network on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you stream podcasts.
Trial prosecutor Daniel Boucher called multiple experts to prove his case that Tanya had shaken Alicia to death. The star was the man who performed the autopsy, Dr. Brian Hunter.
His testimony was that she had retinal hemorrhages and bleeding on the outer layers of the brain and swelling of the brain. And those are the classic triad of symptoms for shaken baby syndrome.
This is Dave Moran.
I am the co-director of the Michigan Innocence Clinic at University of Michigan Law School.
Dave says this triad of symptoms is the gold standard for shaken baby syndrome. Brain injury, bleeding around the brain, and bleeding around the eyes. That's what every doctor at the time was taught, including pathologist Dr. Hunter.
So to him, this was a slam dunk case of shaken baby syndrome.
Witt was 13 during Tanya's trial, and she remembers every moment of it.
Honestly, to sit there and listen to how they portrayed this person that I've known for so long on a daily basis, it broke my heart.
What were some of those things that they were saying about her that you knew not to be true?
Oh, she's a young mother, and she just snapped.
You got headaches, you're stressing out, living at the dust house, you have no money, no job, you're not getting along with your boyfriend, you take care of your child 99.9% of the time, and you snapped that particular day. That's what happened, isn't it?
And it's like, no, I never once saw her lose her patience with children like that. Never once saw her even get frustrated in that type of way. So to hear them portray somebody you love and know so deeply on the news and in the papers and in a courtroom where you can't say anything, it was awful.
Yeah, what did she look like during all that?
In shock. And that was portrayed badly too. Oh, look, she has no emotion. Oh, she's sitting there speechless. She's a teenager who lost her daughters. And you people, you know, she's being charged with these horrendous crimes.
Tanya needed a great defense to beat the, quote, slam dunk case the prosecution claimed they had.
My mom, bless her heart, you know, went through the yellow pages trying to find an attorney who would agree to take a murder case. She found Hettinger and Hettinger out of Kalamazoo. Her and my grandmother had to go through their 401k just to get the funds to retain him.
Tanya's family paid Edwin Hettinger for what they thought was going to be the best defense. But
the defense actually agreed that it was shaken baby, but
Oh, yes.
It wasn't.
The original defense at trial did not contest the shaken baby syndrome.
Dave says in those days, there weren't many people disputing the science behind shaken baby syndrome, at least not locally.
I really don't think that there was anybody in Michigan who was questioning any part of the shaken baby syndrome dogma at that point.
So Tanya's attorney worked with the knowledge and resources he had.
He believed that a crime had been committed, but didn't believe that it was me that did it. So his focus was on somebody else doing it.
Someone else like Alan.
I didn't want to believe it, and I still to this day don't believe it. But it was just, you know, when they're saying that this is absolutely positively what happened, and I know I didn't do it, immediately my mind is like, you know, maybe he did, but I don't believe he ever would have harmed her.
Especially now that you know,
yeah, and I mean, I knew him back then, and I knew that's not something that he would have done.
But at the time, that's the only defense she had, casting reasonable doubt as to who may have shaken Alicia.
Maybe the baby could have been shaken when she was in the custody of her paternal grandparents the day before, and then the symptoms only showed up the next day.
Tanya also testified in her own defense.
She tried to testify about Alicia's sickliness, her troubled breathing before, but that didn't really lead anywhere because, again, that wasn't the defense theory. There was no expert to back that up. Maybe there was something else going on here.
Is there any explanation why that wasn't, was it tried to be presented and then it was barred, or why wasn't any of this previous medical history entered?
Well, I think the defense lawyer correctly recognized that it would have been treated as a red herring. The prosecution would have criticized him for creating a red herring because you've heard from all the experts that none of what happened before matters. All that matters now is that this baby was shaken just before she died. So none of that would have worked.
Tanya felt like there was no winning.
At that point, I kind of felt like I'm going to prison.
During jury deliberations, she remembers her lawyer saying,
if the jury comes out and they refuse to look you in the eye, you're pretty much guaranteed that they're going to find you guilty. And that's exactly what happened. My heart just dropped watching them walk out of there, and only one of them looked me in the eye. The rest of them just looked at the floor and made their way back to their seats before they handed over their verdict.
I was not actually prepared for them to find her guilty because I knew she was innocent. So that, I mean, who can prepare you for that?
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you've arrived at a verdict for your fourth person.
My niece was in the background, and if you ever pull up the court documents, you will hear her like scream when they read the verdict.
Guilty, Your Honor. Oh my God, no. So you find the defendant guilty as charged?
And it was not even a second after that that they were dragging her out. And I'm trying to reach over the banister and grab her hands. And my, you know, everybody's crying, everybody's screaming, and we're all trying to grab at her. You know, they wouldn't even let her say anything. You know, they just drug her out like this horrendous criminal. They wouldn't even let her say goodbye to her family. So for me, being, you know, 13. Seeing them rip my best friend away and my bigger sister to me like that, it was heartbreaking.
On April 14th, 2003, then 20-year-old Tanya Miller was convicted of second-degree murder and was later sentenced to almost 3 decades behind bars.
What were your first years in prison like?
It's a huge culture shock to just have everything taken away and just be told what you can have or what you can do. And so they ask you a bunch of questions about, you know, your mental health, about your past and whatnot. And this man literally looked me in my face and was like, you can't tell me that you're 20 years old with a 20-year sentence and you've never done drugs or alcohol. Like, he did not believe that.
And you had never done drugs or alcohol.
Never. Never had an inclination to attempt anything. Still don't. So it just blew me away that, like, my attorney didn't believe in me, and now I'm sitting here and I'm telling you that I've never done this, and you're like, I don't believe you. What?
And you had doctors not believing you?
And doctors not believing me, yeah.
I imagine feeling so small when nobody believes what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Tanya's family believed her. And for as long as they could, they tried to support her.
My family, you know, they're not financially secure, really. So that drive and, you know, having to buy, like, photo tickets or, you know, a meal card or whatever to be able to sit comfortably and just chat and, you know, eat with them and whatnot. It was a lot on them. And my mom had a really hard time leaving me there. And my baby sister had a really hard time leaving me there. And so my mom kind of felt like it wasn't worth bringing her or coming when it took so long for her to recover afterward.
So they stopped visiting as much.
I'm like, I have so many siblings. If they just come, you know, once a month, I'll have somebody come, you know, every month for a year. And it just didn't work out that way at all. So the longer you do, the less you'll see them, the less you'll hear from them, the less they'll answer the phone. And that is 100% the truth.
But as always, there was Whit writing and calling and checking in.
I feared for her life in prison, you know, all the time. Because of what they say she did,
mm-hmm.
and what people can do to people in prison that hurt children, even though she didn't. So, like, I constantly feared for her.
But Tanya says she kept out of trouble by keeping busy.
I worked the entire time, and I worked as much as they would let me. And I took as many classes as I could, whatever I could get into. I even applied for, like, AA and NA just to be a part of something.
And between work and classes, Tanya's life was passing her by. No 21st birthday celebration, no college commencement ceremony.
So many missed Christmases, birthdays, holidays. Life's not fair. Life's not fair.
And Tanya was missing out on her daughter Kayla's life as well. At first, Kayla stayed with family, and Whit tried to remain a constant in Kayla's life, too.
I went out there every weekend. I bought, we had matching pajamas. That was my little buddy, Blue's Clues. I took as many pictures as I could every weekend that I went. I went out there every weekend, and I made this giant photo album for her. And just added through it throughout the years of, like, the letters she would send me or the drawings she would send me. I just tried to keep her in the loop with the other child until I couldn't anymore.
Eventually, Kayla was adopted and denied contact with Tanya and her loved ones. And the years kept passing by until one day, out of the blue, a man reached out to Tanya by the name of Jeremy Perry.
He was just a layman on the street. He had no interest in the whole system or anything. He was a computer engineer, maybe. I might have that wrong. But he's seen my picture, and he was like, your picture just stood in my mind because you were so young with such a long time. And so he said it was probably a year later, like, my name kind of fell back into his mind, and he looked me up, and he said he immediately believed that I didn't do that. And so he wrote to me, and he asked me if I had heard of the Michigan Innocence Clinic.
I'm thinking it was about 2015 when we first reviewed the case. We, by that point, had litigated several other shaken baby syndrome cases. We had our first case in 2010, that of Julie Bomber, and we had taken on several other cases.
Dave says that in the decade since Tanya had been convicted, there had been a sea change in shaken baby syndrome science.
What we've learned about shaken baby syndrome really is twofold. First of all, it may not exist at all because of the biomechanical difficulties.
Dave says it's virtually impossible to shake a baby hard enough to cause the triad of symptoms without breaking its neck.
If you could shake a baby hard enough to cause these particular symptoms, you would almost certainly fracture the neck, and that would be the cause of death. And there was no neck injury to Alicia.
And then there was Alicia's medical history.
One of the important things is there a prior history? And have there been prior instances of the baby not being well, which can lead us, and especially, of course, our experts, to see, are any of the alternative causes for these symptoms present? And we had all of that in spades here. We had medical records showing that Alicia had had a series of collapses before. Our student attorneys went out and interviewed the people who had seen Alicia have these problems.
And there was a smoking gun that came from the prosecution's own expert.
In one line on page 7 of the autopsy report, which was the very last page of the report, the forensic pathologist who did the autopsy on Alicia after she died, and he actually noted that Alicia had acute bronchial pneumonia.
Pneumonia. The slides from Alicia's lungs during autopsy showed acute bronchial pneumonia. Tanya had been right all along. Alicia was really sick.
When you think of Mexican culture, you think of avocado, mariachi, delicious cuisine, and of course, lucha libre. It doesn't get more Mexican than this. Lucha Libre is known globally because it is much more than just a sport and much more than just entertainment. Lucha Libre is a type of storytelling. It's a dance. It's tradition. It's culture. This is Lucha Libre Behind the Mask, a 12-episode podcast in both English and Spanish about the history and cultural richness of Lucha Libre. And I'm your host, Santos Escobar, the emperor of Lucha Libre and a WWE superstar. Santos! Join me as we learn more about the history behind this spectacular sport from its inception in the United States to how it became a global symbol of Mexican culture. We'll learn more about some of the most iconic heroes in the ring. This is Lucha Libre Behind the Mask. Listen to Lucha Libre Behind the Mask as part of My Cultura Podcast Network on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you stream podcasts.
Hello, everyone. I am Lacey Lamar.
And I'm Amber Ruffin, a better Lacey Lamar.
Boo.
Okay, everybody, we have exciting news to share. We're back with season two of the Amber and Lacey, Lacey and Amber show on Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network. You thought you had fun last season? Well, you were right. And you should tune in today for new fun segments like Sister Court and listening to Lacey's steamy DMs.
We've got new and exciting guests like Michael Beach. That's my husband. Daphne Spring. Daniel Thrasher, Peppermint, Morgan J, and more. You gotta watch us.
No, you mean you have to listen to us. I mean, you can still watch us, but you gotta listen. Like, if you're watching us, you have to tell us. Like, if you're out the window, you have to say, hey, I'm watching you outside of the window. Just, you know what? Listen to the Amber and Lacey, Lacey and Amber show on Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How do you feel about biscuits? Hi, I'm Akila Hughes, and I'm so excited about my new podcast, Rebel Spirit, where I head back to my hometown in Kentucky and try to convince my high school to change their racist mascot, the Rebels, into something everyone in the South loves, the biscuits.
I was a lady rebel. Like, what does that even mean?
I mean, the Boone County Rebels will stay the Boone County Rebels, but the image of
it's right here in black and white in print. A lion.
An individual that came to the school saying that God sent him to talk to me about the mascot switch is a leader. You choose hills that you want to die on.
Why would we want to be the losing team? I just take all the other stuff out of
home. Segregation academies, when civil rights said that we need to integrate public schools, these charter schools were exempt from that.
Bigger than a flag or mascot.
You have to be ready for serious backlash.
Listen to Rebel Spirit on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In so many of these cases, women are just not believed. Is this a pattern you see? And how was the pneumonia not caught? It's just kind of mind-blowing.
It is. It is. I mean, it's amazing that you could have slides. I mean, it's so obvious that there's something terribly, terribly wrong. But it's this dogma that still exists today.
A dogma that leads doctors to almost instinctively diagnose shaken baby syndrome, ignoring the pleading mothers in front of them.
This was somebody who was doing her level best to try and get the appropriate help for her infant and was getting blown off. Shaken baby syndrome results in lots and lots of wrongful conviction of women. Probably more than anything else, because women are usually the primary caregivers for young infants.
Dave hired four of the leading experts in shaken baby syndrome to look at Tanya's case.
They all came to very similar overlapping conclusions about what had actually happened to Alicia. Dr. Francis Green, who is one of the world's leading experts in pediatric lung pathology, who looked at the slides, and he said those slides are inconsistent with life because Alicia had a case of acute pneumonia that was so serious that she could not have survived it. So we filed the case.
In 2018, they were granted a hearing, and up against the experts and the facts,
the judge ruled in favor of Tanya and granted her a new trial.
It was really no contest between the prosecution's one expert from 2003 coming back and our experts. And so the prosecution knew they could not win a retrial. And so in early 2021, Tanya was released, and that was a glorious day.
Tanya remembers leaving the prison and the people inside she had grown up with.
And so then when I was leaving, they were all banging on the windows and, you know, waving their goodbyes and everything.
18 years.
18 years. Yeah, it becomes a family unit in there.
But now Tanya was free to be with her family on the outside.
So I took some time just to really get to know all of my siblings' children, all my nieces and nephews, because they were all married and divorced and having kids and everything while I was gone. You know, I lost my father. I lost my grandparents. I have one surviving grandmother right now. And so I took a lot of time just kind of focusing on family.
I'm surprised I didn't break her bones from hugging her so hard.
And that family includes Wit.
Wait, is this real? Like, she's really out. Like, okay, I'm immediately going to Michigan. I spent the night there with her. You know, we had a bonfire and hung out, and we'd never been able to hang out as adults.
And remember the photo album Wit made while Tanya was in prison? She gave it to her.
Pictures of when we were kids together. I had all her letters she wrote me from jail in it. Even her newspaper clippings, I clipped them all out as a kid.
Wit still admires and looks up to Tanya after all these years.
You see her and she's always laughing. And, you know, she's not sitting over there like with a nasty look on her face or, you know what I mean? She's happy. She's living her life that she's deserved to live. And I tell her, live your life.
And she is.
I've kind of done a few things I probably never would have done.
Like what?
Jumping out of a plane.
Oh my gosh. You went skydiving?
I went skydiving. Yeah.
How was that?
It was incredible, wow. To be honest. Yeah. It was, I can't even describe the freeness that you feel just doing that.
But there's still one part about her life that's on hold. Her relationship with her firstborn, Kayla, now 23 years old. Tanya's reached out a couple of times, but has been shut out.
I'm trying to put myself in her shoes and just give her that time and that space and hope that eventually she'll understand that I loved her all of these years and I didn't do this to her little sister and I would have been in her life if I had the opportunity. And, you know, just that her family really, truly does love her. Everybody wants to get to know her. Everybody wants a part of her life. They were all kind of told that they couldn't be a part of her life. And so nobody abandoned her. She's never been abandoned. She's never been forgotten. We celebrate her birthday every year. You know, we talk about her all the time. We just wish her well.
According to the National Registry of Exonerations, at least 30 shaken baby syndrome convictions have been overturned in the last 3 decades. Prosecutors continue to charge parents and caretakers with this crime. Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling. Please support your local innocence organizations and go to the links in the episode description to see how you can help. This episode was written by me, Maggie Freeling, with story editing and mixing by senior producer Rebecca Ibarra. Our producer is Kathleen Fink, our researcher Shelby Sorrells, with additional mixing by Josh Allen and additional production help by Jeff Clyburn and Connor Hall. Thank you to the podcast Life of the Law and the Medill Justice Project for letting us use their audio of Tanya's trial. Executive producers are Jason Flom, Jeff Kempler, and Kevin Wirtis. The music is by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer Jay Ralph. Make sure to follow us on all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on all platforms at Maggie Freeling. Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling is a production of Lava for Good podcast in association with Signal Company No. 1.
Do you ever wonder wonder where your favorite foods come from?
Like, what's the history behind bacon-wrapped hot dogs?
Hi, I'm Eva Longoria.
Hi, I'm Maite Gomez-Rejon.
Our podcast, Hungry for History, is back.
And this season, we're taking an even bigger bite
out of the most delicious food and its history.
Seeing that the most popular cocktail is the margarita, followed by the mojito from Cuba and the piña colada from Puerto Rico.
Listen to Hungry for History on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. It's me, Katie Couric. You know, if you've been following me on social media, you know I love to cook, or at least try, especially alongside some of my favorite chefs and foodies, like Benny Blanco, Jake Cohen, Lydie Hoik, Allison Roman, and Ina Garten. So I started a free newsletter called Good Taste to share recipes, tips, and kitchen must-haves. Just sign up at katiecouric.com/goodtaste. That's KATIECOURIC.com/goodtaste. I promise your taste buds will be happy you did.
Señora Sex Ed is not your mommy's sex talk. This show is La Plática like you've never heard it before. We're breaking the stigma and silence around sex and sexuality in Latinx communities.
This podcast is an intergenerational conversation between Latinas from Gen X to Gen Z.
We're your hosts, Diosa and Mala. You might recognize us from our first show, Locatora Radio. Listen to Señora Sex Ed on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.